This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. The date, November 11th, 2011, was already pretty easy to remember. 11, 11, 11. But yesterday, one more reason to commit that date to memory was announced. Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art will open the doors for the first time to the public that day. The date was first announced yesterday at the monthly meeting of the Arkansas State Parks, Recreation, and Travel Commission in Bentonville. Virginia Gurman, the Director of Marketing Services at Crystal Bridges, says the official opening date could be set after a few construction goals were met.
We've been very satisfied with the progress on the construction, and there were a couple of milestones that were achieved in the last few months, including the North Bridge, the suspension bridge design and engineering was complete on that, at least partially complete, enough for us to be confident in designing and engineering and constructing the two other bridges that will be on site.
That means there are just over 350 days left between now and the public opening of the highly anticipated museum. Over the past few years, the collection has been growing. Just this summer, works by Roy Lichtenstein and Andy Warhol were added. To prepare for that 11-11-11 opening, much is left to do.
All of the planning that you might imagine, the planning for the opening events, the plan for operating, all of that will be what we'll be focused on for the next year, internally, administratively.
The announced opening date means there will be some changes even before next November. The Crystal Bridges at the Massey, the home for temporary exhibits in downtown Bentonville, will end that run of temporary exhibits with the current David Hockney exhibition.
We will convert that after this is, that closes on January 9th. We will convert that into a preview center so visitors can come and look at the model and really get a clear update and maps and directions about how to go to the observation deck and really check it out for themselves.
While the opening date is set, that's about the only detail we know about the opening. Virginia Gurman says there will be, of course, a big celebration for the opening, and those details are being worked out. But nothing specific has been announced to the public. In fact, the official press release yesterday announcing the opening date was just two paragraphs. Ironing out the remaining details before the opening, Gurman says, will take the entire staff at Crystal Bridges.
It will take the team, yes. We have a librarian now. She is working on that part of the collection, and culinary services director. I mean, we really are ramping up our staff in order to plan and to be prepared.
And finally, not that it ever didn't seem possible or didn't seem tangible, especially when you're working in the midst of it, you know, every day of the year, but does a date, does that give it one little bit more,
it's a shot of reality. Oh my gosh.
I was going to say adrenaline, but.
Yes, adrenaline too, yes.
That's Virginia Gurman, the Director of Marketing Services at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. Yesterday, the museum announced it would open to the public on November 11th, 2011, 11-11-11. She talked to us yesterday in her office, just a few hours after the announcement had been made public. This is Ozarks at Large. This month, business leaders participated in a laboratory to explore ways to generate revenue from sustainability. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich attended this meeting and provides an exclusive look at how the business sector is now grappling with making green off of being green.
Around the globe, retailers are being hard-pressed to not only sell ecologically safe product, but also to operate sustainable companies. Faced with this emerging paradigm, these companies and their suppliers are realizing they also need to capitalize on being sustainable. But how is the question? That's why a day-long solutions lab, co-organized by the Environmental Defense Fund and the Applied Sustainability Center in the Walton College of Business, was packed. The 80 attendees were not the usual environmental ilk. Rather, these men in designer suits and women in glossy high heels listened closely to leading sustainable retail experts.
How do we tilt the floor for all the products to start looking in the direction of how do we move forward in the terms of chemical sustainability? So that's been my recent approach.
Retail suppliers here represented a who's who of industry. Stonyfield Farms, Electrolux, Dean Foods, Syngenta, Lipton Tea, Unilever, and Waste Management, all looking to build the business case for sustainability. The gathering's part of a nationwide Green Innovators in Business 2010 Solutions Labs series, hosted in 9 cities, including Boston, Seattle, Chicago, New York, Washington, D.C., and Fayetteville, Arkansas. Leah Jepson, Director of Sustainability for Global Sourcing at Walmart, was much sought after during this conference. She says a sustainable supply chain precedes demand by consumers for now.
So the consumer really isn't demanding it just yet. We as a company are deciding we need to take it on because it's the right thing to do right now. So that's really where it's coming from.
Several years ago, Walmart announced the formation of a sustainability consortium to establish global scientific standards to measure the sustainability of consumer products. Now the question is how to make money from being sustainable, right? Leah Jepson said companies should start with an ecological audit.
The first thing I say start with is have some baselines. What is your energy usage on products? What is your water usage on products? What are all of these baselines that you have? What is your carbon footprint? Once you have those baselines, you can start measuring and you can start saving and you can make a difference on that. That's what I'd start with.
And assess the waste stream, Leah Jepson said. Walmart has set an ambitious goal to generate zero waste by 2025. Vonda Lockwood is Walmart's Director of Innovations and Sustainability. She oversees a program called Landfill Waste Reduction at stores, clubs, and distribution centers.
So, for example, apparel that gets returned for whatever reason, can't be resold, instead of throwing it away, we now send it to the return centers and it gets liquidated, repurposed, reused, etc. Items like icing buckets, absorbent buckets, floral buckets, for example, those were basically once done going into the trash. So now we rinse them, wash them a little, palletize them, send them back to the return center. They're either liquidated, repurposed, grind, if you will, and those get put back into a product line. So instead of items going into the waste stream, we're trying to find an exit strategy for everything that comes into our buildings that it has a plan to leave our building other than to the landfill.
And with recycled materials being a commodity, Vonda Lockwood advised participants to create a revenue stream from sales of their recycled waste. Lockwood said every division at Walmart is on a sustainable track, and all its vendors, called supplier partners, must also become zero waste compliant. And she's clearly enthusiastic about pushing this.
It's been a great journey. I've been fortunate to have a great support team. And this has been, in my career with Walmart, one of the most exciting things to work on. So I'm looking forward. By no means are we done, but we have made a great accomplishment so far.
At the 2009 annual shareholders meeting in Fayetteville, Walmart's leader, Mike Duke, declared his company's goal is to provide value to the customer, revenue for the stockholder, while being good for the earth. Since 2005, Walmart's top eco advisor has been the Environmental Defense Fund, based in San Francisco. EDF opened an office in Bentonville in 2007. Michelle Harvey, EDF project manager, stressed there's no conflict of interest in the partnership.
One of the key things about the way Environmental Defense Fund works with private business, we did never take money from any of our partners. When we partner with a corporation, we are looking at the planet as the client, and we really need the business to work with us. So working with Walmart, for instance, is a way to get better environmental results. So we're lucky in that we're not in a situation for conflict of interest. Our funding comes through our donors, and we're able to say what we think and feel is important.
EDF operates an online innovation exchange for business and the environment and has been advising merchants for over 20 years.
We're a very small group. We only have, on any given team, we have 3 or 4 people. And so here in Bentonville, for instance, we'll get calls from suppliers who say, oh, can you work with us? And we really can't. We just don't have that many people. So the innovation exchange is a way to capture good ideas, to share case studies, to present blogs and new innovations so that we can offer people opportunities on what to do about their carbon footprint or waste or water, those types of things.
Taking stock of inventory, a life cycle assessment, as it's called, of products was discussed from manufacturing to disposal, as well as renewable and sustainable sourcing practices. Most notable at this gathering was a plethora of emerging businesses hawking sustainable consulting, basically making money on teaching companies to make money on being sustainable. Companies with the name like Clear Green Advisors, Planet Forward, 2Degrees, Eco Tuesday, and a media group called GreenBiz.com. These are capitalists, after all, with stockholders to satisfy. So how does one leverage sustainability to grow revenue? Michelle Harvey.
Use good environmental decision-making to get better business results. Energy efficiency is the easiest story to tell. Reducing your energy reduces your energy costs, but it reduces greenhouse gas. It's a good deal for the planet. But in a lot of cases, waste is a good example. You've paid for something, and then you pay to throw it away. So if you can reduce your inputs, if you can change what you have to dispose of at the end of the day, you're going to be saving your organization money. And again, you're going to have better benefits for the planet.
At the day-long paperless conference, the agenda, even the agenda was on cardstock placards posted at each table. And the group posted its own wiki on the web, tracked and tweeted by participants via smartphone and iPad. They also networked on the best public relations methods to tout their sustainable management practices and products. The best example of this is Clorox.
Greg Van Buskirk, I'm a research fellow with a Clorox company. I'm responsible right now for developing technical support for our external communications, but I've been a formulator for close to 30 years, well, over 30 years now, and been responsible for cleaning products and hard surface cleaning products, including Greenworks, which is our natural line of cleaning products.
Clorox launched Greenworks, its brand of natural cleaners, in January 2008, producing natural laundry detergent, dish soap, even toilet cleaners. The company donates a portion of its Greenworks profits to the Sierra Club. Clorox also sells conventional bleach, but its website teaches consumers that while industrial bleach used in wood and paper products pose a hazard, household bleach is harmless to the environment if used correctly.
You know, strangely, one of my responsibilities is to talk about bleach, too. And bleach is kind of that target on the deer's chest in the old Gary Larson cartoon, you know, bummer of a birthmark, Hal. But in order to come into this new form, knowing that people were going to be a little bit, let's say, cynical about it, we knew that we had to actually be better than the other green products out there as far as what choices of raw materials we would take. And so we set our boundary to be at least 95% renewably sourced. We've investigated hybrid molecules that are somewhat petroleum-based while also renewably based. Honest to goodness, that's coming up against, for instance, the Natural Products Association saying, no, that's going to be counted as petroleum-based. So we have to find other ways to enlarge our inventory of raw materials that we can have.
What's coming first, the demand for environmental products or your concern for the environment as a company?
I won't say necessarily that we were so far ahead that we were decades in the making. We weren't. But we were, I would say, at least a good couple of years before everyone started moving this way. We were the moving force toward the fulcrum that put everybody on the tipping point.
Clorox, a sustainability leader, the company's even wending its way towards zero animal testing and producing containers without petrochemicals. So did you know that Clorox purchased the Burt's Bees franchise, your golden-tubed peppermint beeswax lip balm addiction? That's another way to brand yourself as sustainable, by product sustainable consumers crave. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large, we'll help you prepare for the future. Becca Bacon-Martin has a look at a big entertainment weekend and week ahead. We'll also let you know what the city of Bentonville is doing this winter. There's a Christmas parade, public showings of seasonal movies like It's a Wonderful Life and more. Also, big Thanksgiving meal scheduled for Thursday afternoon, Thanksgiving Day in Siloam Springs, and more. That's all still ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large. A couple of other notes about events that are coming up. Joe Neal, who you hear often on Ozarks at Large, will read selections from his new book, The Birdside Baptist and Other Ornithological Mysteries, at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville Saturday night beginning at 7. He'll also show pictures of birds from the book. The event is free and open to the public. And the M&N Augustine Foundation, a local nonprofit volunteer organization, is hosting their annual international festival Saturday night from 6:30 until 9:30 at St. Joseph's School at 1722 North Star Road in Fayetteville. The International Festival, a fun family event, features food from around the world, entertainment, over 100 silent auction items, and some raffle prizes as well. There will also be tasting samples from some area restaurants and countries. Well, not area countries, but from some countries. For tickets or information, mnaugustinefoundation.org. And it is time for the KUAF and Friends Holiday Giveaway. Thanks to our generous KUAF underwriters, it's our chance to give back to you. You could win a gift from Penguin Ed's Barbecue, Walton Arts Center, or artist Kathy P. Thompson, many others as well. Details and registration available on the web at KUAF.com. The drawing for the prizes will be Thursday, December 16th, during Classical Music with P.J. Hrabowski. Please, just one entry per person. Thanks and good luck. This is Ozarks at Large on KUAF 91.3 FM. Thursday, for the ninth consecutive year, there will be a big, free Thanksgiving meal at First United Methodist Church in Siloam Springs at 325 East Twin Springs Road. The meal is open to all, and for people in the Siloam Springs area unable to make it to the church, Thanksgiving meals will be delivered. David Graves helps organize the annual meal.
I've learned that I've got such a great crew of helpers that come in and volunteers with such wonderful, beautiful servants' hearts that each year I get to do less and less. So that's a good thing, I guess. I sit back and just drink coffee for the most part.
Now, you say that, but when does the preparation start?
We will start ordering food a couple of weeks ago on that and put out sign-up sheets for volunteers, put some notifications in the paper and some radio spots so people know to start calling in. The phone has been ringing at home already for the last 3 weeks, people looking for meals or looking to volunteer.
How many people do you expect to see or to serve?
Total, guessing about 375 to 400. Person I work with in Siloam Springs has done a good job of letting the schools be notified about this. So a lot of kids have been notified through schools and have already received more phone calls than usual.
So up to perhaps slightly more than 400. How will that work on Thanksgiving morning?
It'll be very busy. I'll start about midnight just getting the birds in the oven. And about 5 o'clock, that's when everything really starts to kick in and get the things prepared and heated up and ready to go.
And then at what time do the doors open?
Doors open at 12 o'clock noon at our church at 325 East Twin Springs in Siloam Springs. We will start making deliveries about 11 o'clock. I think last year we delivered about 125, 150 meals.
It's a lot. How many birds will you have in the oven?
This year I'm going to bump up to 16. There are full boneless turkeys on that, so 100% yield. So we get a lot more servings per that way without having to carve around bones.
Do you have enough volunteers?
Always have more than enough. That's the best thing about it. So a lot of people will either be in the kitchen or be out in the fellowship hall talking to people or just helping serve food. So we have a great staff of volunteers.
Now this year, you don't stop at Thanksgiving. There's going to be Christmas delivery?
Correct. We're going to start our first Christmas Eve delivery. Those that need to either maybe come in and pick up a meal or that are shut in that need a meal delivered to them, we will deliver that afternoon, probably around 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Any idea how many of those deliveries?
Absolutely. Going into this so blind, Kyle, I have no idea what to expect. I think that we will do a good job of letting people know during Thanksgiving of what we're doing, so hope to have a base number set up upon what we do for Thanksgiving.
Where does the food come from?
I buy this through local suppliers at supply area restaurants, and we just sort of raise funds throughout the year, so this is just totally support-driven by volunteers.
Okay, so midnight, the birds start to go in, and they obviously don't have 16 ovens, so it's a rotation?
Four large ovens. I'll get them all fit in there.
Really?
Yes.
Are you alone at this point? Just you, the coffee, and the
just
turkeys?
Just me and the coffee, and get the birds going and make sure that nothing flares up. And then about 5 o'clock, we'll have the volunteers come in. My main job really is to have the coffee made at 5 o'clock.
Ninth annual, safe to say this has become a tradition now?
I think at 10 years, it's become an official tradition. I'm not sure what the exact rules are on that. But yeah, it's I get asked about this even during the summertime. Hey, are we going to do this again? And, of course, as long as everyone's willing to come out and help and everything, it happens year in, year out.
David, as always, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, Kyle.
David Graves is one of the organizers of the annual Thanksgiving meal at First United Methodist Church in Siloam Springs. The meal will be served beginning at noon Thursday at the church at 325 East Twin Springs Road in Siloam Springs. For more information about the Thanksgiving meal or the Thanksgiving and Christmas meal deliveries, David says you can call him at 479-524-3240. We'll read that number again at the end of this edition of Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. In a couple of weeks, hundreds of runners, at least, will be covering just over 13 miles inside the city limits of Fayetteville. Now, the city has a rich running history. The Hogeye Marathon will celebrate its 35th year this coming spring, and the Chili Pepper Festival has become a Mid-America destination for runners of all levels. Bruce Dunn is the promoter for the first ever Fayetteville Half Marathon. He says the race weekend, December 11th and 12th, will include more than just the half marathon.
A 5K and a 1 mile walk on that Sunday. And the day before, we're pretty excited about bringing back a mile run. We're calling it the Magic Mile.
Let's talk about this mile run, because there aren't many mile runs that aren't associated with a scholastic track meet. Not many chances for community members to run a mile.
Exactly. And I think, you know, when I had the Mr. Guy clothing store down the square many years ago, you would see Fayetteville High School have a run. And so there were a couple of reasons. One, we wanted to bring back a run for the kids. Kids have not had enough of these 1 mile short events all the way to, we probably can't say who the elite runners, athlete sprinters will be, but we'll have all the way on the other end of the spectrum. So downtown on Saturday starting at 10 o'clock, and then we'll go right into the health and wellness expo that will be at the town center later that day.
And then Sunday, the half marathon?
Half marathon will start at 8 o'clock. Then we'll have a 5K, which is going to be a great course as well, and then a 1 mile walk. Everything on Sunday, ending at the John McDonnell Outdoor Track Center inside the stadium. Stadium, video screen, music, the whole atmosphere we're very excited about.
Okay, Fayetteville, there are 5Ks, 10Ks. The Hogeye Marathon's been around for 35 years. You're going to have hills, right?
We're going to have a few, and but it's a net downhill, Kyle.
Now, that's the promoter right there. It's a net downhill in Fayetteville.
Yes. Well, it's a two-loop course. And so, obviously, starting and finishing in John McDonnell Stadium, that's flat. But think about the bottom end of the two-loop course is Maple and Garland. Mm-hmm. You're going to run north on Garland all the way out to close to the Agri Park, Pauline Whitaker area on Garland. And then you're going to make your way back over to Sycamore, over to a small section of the trail, Skull Creek, over to Maple, Maple over to Dixon Street, back on Arkansas Avenue. You're going to go in front of Old Main, back into Garland in the section that you cannot go now because it's a transit area, back to Maple and Garland. You'll do a shortened version of that loop again, and then the third time you come through Maple and Garland, you're going to run down Maple Street and then run down Razorback. So we're calling it a net downhill.
And you end in the track center in that complex.
Well, and when we started thinking about this probably almost a year ago, we were trying to find what would be unique to a half marathon in the fall, maybe early winter. We didn't know exactly what the date was going to be. We didn't want to duplicate Hogeye, great event, and so we wanted a new reason for people to come, and we thought John McDonnell Outdoor Track Center, and just
and
from
that,
there.
That has a big video board. Will that be in operation?
Full video board. We'll have people will have their image of the people as they enter the track, and also when they cross the finish line, we'll have scrolling results. It's really going to be nice to see and utilize something that you don't often see at even some of the largest events around the country.
First time for this race. Are there any challenges? You've put together triathlons and the Joe Martin bike race. What's the biggest challenge for the first time you put on an event?
Well, the unknowns. I mean, it always is the unknowns of, you know, you're closing streets. It's not our first time to do this, but with the running race, you have to really pay a little more attention to all the small side streets. And because we are closing a lot more area than normally for a bike race, you just want to make sure you have all your I's dotted and T's crossed if you plan for emergency issues. And also, we try to mitigate as much impact as we can have to residents. I mean, I think that's with any race promoter. They want to make sure they communicate.
You can sign up online still.
Online. And we're actually probably this year going to have the day before registration at the town center. There's obviously no race day registration, but we'll probably allow it to even people to sign up that the day before.
It's a unique Sunday that you've selected. It's in the middle of finals, so that means campus is pretty quiet. And it's a Sunday in December, so most, I mean, you're closing streets, but it seems like the least inconvenient time to do so.
Well, you know, you're early morning on a Sunday. We're trying to also get out of the streets that would have churches in that area. Sunday of finals, there are not any finals. No transit service at the U of A. There'll never be a basketball game on that day. Football season is over. And so we really hope it's going to be a perfect time of year, weather, running weather.
Well, that was my other thing. December in the Ozarks, generally not crazy. But,
you know, the one thing about it, rain, snow, sleet, or shine, we will go as a running race. We hope that it's going to be, you know, typically it's about 45 degrees as the temperature. We've looked it up. But you know that you can have some very warm days early December. Last year, okay, we might have had a little challenge. But, you know, as the weather's been going right now, we think we probably won't have any winter until January.
Going back to Saturday, the mile run, what do you expect we'll see the winner do the time? Have you thought about that?
We've thought a little bit about it. I think there's got to be sub 4 minutes. I mean, it's all downhill. Yes, running downhill can be a challenge if you're not used to running downhill. But I've got to believe this is all downhill. It's going to start on the square. It's going to go down East Street, down Dixon Street. Right there in front of Common Grounds will be the finish line. And I'm expecting a sub 4 minute mile.
All right. Well, what do you say to an actor break a leg? You wouldn't say that to someone who's about to promote a race.
We hope not. I guess you probably could, but you know, best.
How about break a sweat?
Break a sweat. Okay, we'll have to use that maybe.
Okay. All right, Bruce. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Kyle.
Bruce Dunn is the promoter of the Fayetteville Half Marathon. The race takes place the weekend of December 11th and 12th. You can learn more at FayettevilleHalf.com. You can hear more about the Fayetteville Half Marathon, including how organizers have set up an environmentally friendly race and what happens to the clothes shed by runners as they get warmer. That audio extra can be found at OzarksAtLarge.com. And more running next week on Ozarks at Large as we'll look ahead to the 35th annual Hogeye Marathon as organizers of that race begin to offer training for the 26.2-mile course. And we'll also find out why distance runners in Tulsa next month can run to the center of the universe. That's next week on Ozarks at Large.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blue Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. This week, we preview the 2010 Blues in the Natural State, hosted by the Ozark Blues Society, and that happens Saturday, November 27th. And you'll hear music from Brickfield's Gospel Blue Band, Scott Leeper, Nathan Aronowitz. Let's see, we've also got Watermelon Slim, Rob Stone, Jim Burns, Michael Burks, and a few others. And again, that's this Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
It's beginning to sound a lot like Christmas in Bentonville. Okay, so little drummer boy, it's not. But yesterday afternoon on the Bentonville Square, there was plenty of preparation work for this weekend's winter festival kickoff that will also lead into the Christmas season in downtown Bentonville. The grounds were being manicured, lights were being strung across the square. Over the next few weeks in Bentonville, there will be a pageant, a Christmas parade, seasonal music, ice skating, public showings of Christmas movies like It's a Wonderful Life, and more. We asked Daniel Hintz, the executive director of Downtown Bentonville Incorporated, to meet us at the square to give us a rundown of Bentonville's holiday happenings.
Bentonville is actually going to be launching a whole Winter Wonderland series. So it's about a little bit over a month of programming that will last throughout the month of November into December and into early January. And it starts on November 20th. We've got the New Balance Girls on the Run, which will be starting. It's a 5K and a 10K. It starts at 7:30 in the morning on the 20th. Then we also have special holiday vendors. A lot of our food vendors from the farmers market will be coming back, so you can pick up holiday meats and fresh produce. We're also going to be doing a lot of chef demonstrations. So if you're wanting that idea about what to do different for Thanksgiving, come on down and check that out. Now, one of the biggest events that's happening on the 20th is the opening of the rink at Ernie Lawrence Plaza. Now, this is a permanent ice skating rink right in downtown. It is absolutely amazing, and so that opens up on the 20th at noon, and then there'll be free skating throughout much of the day, and that goes from November 20th to January 9th. And during the summer and during the warm months, it'll actually turn into a water splash park, and Parks plans to do movies and concerts and all kinds of things on that location. But November 20th launches the inaugural ice skating season in downtown Bentonville. Right after that, starting at 1, we have the Miss Winter Wonderland pageant, and that's going to determine the royalty for our Christmas parade, which is on December 4th. Then we also have live music and other things starting right around 2 o'clock. That'll roll right into about 6 o'clock, because at 6:15 is our official lighting of the square, so everyone gets all hushed and quiet. And the schedule of that, we have a really great schedule around that. But the Arkansas Mass Gospel Choir will be singing right around that time. It's a 50-voice choir that will be down here on the square. They're from all over Arkansas. They're going to be down here. We also have the Justin Hamby Quartet that will be performing a little bit earlier. The Stage One Entertainment, which is a bunch of young people performing. The BHS Chamber Choir, Pride of the Ozarks Harmony Chorus. So Bentonville Academy of Music, a lot of live music going on. But really, that Mass Gospel Choir, just when the lights pop on and they just start singing, they're going to fill the square with lots of beautiful sound. And then right after that, you can wander back to the ice skating rink, the rink at Lawrence Plaza, and we're starting a new tradition, Parks is, of lighting of the Bentonville Christmas tree. Then there's going to be a skating demonstration, and then at 7:45 will be It's a Wonderful Life. The film will be showing at the rink at Ernie Lawrence Plaza. So basically, November 20th starts from 7:30 in the morning, goes all the way to 9 o'clock at night. It's an incredibly long but wondrous day.
You and I stand here on the square, and it's Thursday afternoon, just a couple days before all of this big Winter Wonderland. You can see that the winter preparation is going on here. The lights are being strong, the grass is being freshened up.
That's right. Well, you know, this is the great thing about Winter Wonderland, is it truly is a great partnership between the city of Bentonville, Bentonville Parks, the library, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, downtown Bentonville, the businesses. And so I think what you see is, and here is just not the activity that's happening with the Parks guys, but even our local businesses are getting ready by putting up Christmas displays in the windows, by getting ready to do some great merchandising specials. Our restaurants are preparing for the holiday season. So it truly is a winter wonderland happening here in downtown Bentonville.
The Christmas parade is not this weekend. It is the first weekend of December.
Correct. It is December 4th. Now, we still are taking applications for folks to participate in the parade. And we really hope that people look at this as a Northwest Arkansas parade, that people from all over Northwest Arkansas feel that they can come in and participate. It is a large parade. We have lots and lots of people, 10,000 plus people come into downtown. That's on December 4th, and it is a great, great party here in downtown Bentonville.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you too.
Daniel Hintz is the executive director of Downtown Bentonville Incorporated. He bicycled over to the Bentonville Square yesterday from his office to talk about the upcoming winter events in Bentonville. For more information, bentonvillear.com/parks or downtownbentonville.org.
On this date in 1990, the pop duo Milli Vanilli was stripped of its Grammy Award after it was revealed that neither performer sang on the group's records. They became the first act ever stripped of a Grammy Award. Two aspiring models and former breakdancers were hired to pretend to be the group in videos, concerts, and interviews. Both skilled dancers, the two had met sometime around 1984 and were attempting to make it as singers, dancers, models, or whatever they could. Milli Vanilli's first album, All or Nothing, was released in Europe in 1988 and was an instant success. Retitled Girl, You Know It's True after the lead single, and trimmed a bit, the record was issued in the U.S. in early 1989. The next three Milli Vanilli singles all hit number one. Milli Vanilli was soon nominated for a Grammy Award for Best New Artist, and in early 1990, they won. The duo began pressuring their manager to let them sing all the vocals on the next Milli Vanilli album. Exasperated with them, their producer exposed the whole scheme in November of 1990. Milli Vanilli was stripped of their Grammy, and a class action suit was filed against Arista Records, allowing anyone who believed they'd been defrauded into purchasing the group's records to apply for a rebate. Arista dropped the group and deleted Girl You Know It's True from their catalog, making it the biggest selling album ever taken out of print. In 1991, the duo's producer attempted to reform the group with the original session vocalists, this time crediting them and billing them as the real Milli Vanilli. The resulting Moment of Truth album flopped. The duo regrouped in 1993 as Rob and Fab, however, with their credibility damaged beyond repair, their self-titled debut reportedly sold only 2,000 copies total. On this date in 1928, William A. Oldfield died at age 54 in Washington, D.C., after undergoing gallbladder surgery. Oldfield had been elected as a Democrat to the 61st U.S. Congress and to the 9 succeeding Congresses, serving from 1909 until his death. He served as a member of the House of Representatives Committee on Ways and Means and was chosen as chair of the Democratic Congressional Committee, campaigning across the country for Democratic candidates and incumbents. He was reelected to the 71st Congress, his 10th consecutive term, but he died before he could take office. His wife, Pearl Oldfield, was elected to serve out his term, becoming the first woman from Arkansas elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. President Abraham Lincoln delivered the Gettysburg Address on this date in 1863, as he dedicated a national cemetery at the site of the Civil War battlefield in Pennsylvania. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
This is Friday Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
Bah humbug indeed. You do not know the weight and length of strong chain you bear yourself. It was as full and long as this 7 Christmas Eves ago, and you have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain. I might be talking to Kyle.
The Dickens, you say.
The Dickens, I do. If any of you like Scrooge, would like to blame me for today's indigestion, just let me warn you, it's the first of many such meals. Even though Thanksgiving is still days away, mm-hmm. and Black Friday is a whole week away, Christmas starts this weekend.
Because lights are being turned on at different places.
They are. Saturday features the initial lightings of both the Fayetteville Square's Lights of the Ozarks and the Bentonville Square's Winter Wonderland. Mm-hmm. The Lights of the Ozarks in Fayetteville get started at 6 o'clock Saturday with the Over the Hill We Glow Parade.
Mm-hmm.
And Santa Claus arrives and turns on the lights, and he'll be available for pictures. And then next weekend, it all starts again with the 14th annual Christmas Parade of the Ozarks at 6 o'clock on November 27th in Springdale, and the Rogers Historical Museum's annual open house from 12:30 to 4 on November 28th. The theme at the Hawkins House this year is Twist the Night Before Christmas.
Twist the Night
Before?
Okay. Twas. Okay. I was thinking Chevy Checker as Santa.
I'm going to quit doing this show with you because you're just odd. Oh, and Santa is, of course, everywhere, arriving at the Northwest Arkansas Mall in Fayetteville at 7 tonight and at Pinnacle Hills Promenade in Rogers at 10 tomorrow, and available with his wife for breakfast at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale on December 4th. There will be seatings every 45 minutes from 8 a.m. to 10:15 a.m., and you can call 751-5441 for tickets. And the first of the annual plethora... of nutcrackers. Mm-hmm. What do nutcrackers move in? A nest of nutcrackers?
Oh, what's
a ninja?
The collective noun?
Yeah.
I would say a walnut of nutcrackers.
Well, there's a whole walnut of nutcrackers this year, but the first of them is Tuesday at the Alma Performing Arts Center, the Great Russian Nutcracker, featuring a cast of, you guessed it, Russian dancers. 7:30 p.m. Tuesday, one night only, and tickets are $20 to $30. There are also Nutcrackers December 4th and 5th in Bentonville and Rogers, and December 11th in Fort Smith. So you can check your What's Up today and every Friday until Christmas for all the seasonal updates you could ever want.
And if I ever think to myself I work too much, I'm just going to think about Santa Claus.
Yeah, and how does he get to all those places?
I don't know.
But if you're not into chubby guys in red suits or mice with crowns, mm-hmm. Here's something completely different. The Arkansas Anime Festival is back in Bentonville this weekend with vampires, werewolves, costumers, makeup artists, voice actors, and fencers.
That is something different.
Isn't it, though?
Yes, yes.
I'd love to go to this. I have not been. They had one in Bentonville in the spring. It's put together by the folks that own Realms Anime in Fayetteville. Mm-hmm. And the darker side of the festival this time will be shepherded by a guy named James Horton, who owns Mad Hatter Games Presents. And he's doing a live-action role-playing game based on a world that you can play in online or in chat rooms or live, and you can make your character and take it back into the online version with you. There will be lots of people in capes and high collars.
Gotcha.
And the convention starts at 10 on Saturday and 10 on Sunday. It's at the Clarion Hotel in Bentonville. You can get in for the whole weekend for $35 or pay $25 for just Saturday or $20 for just Sunday. And you can find out more by Googling Arkansas Anime Festival.
So there will be people from all over the state.
Oh, more than the state.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
The folks who, there's a whole room for tabletop gamers. There's a whole room for people who sell the accoutrement for dressing up for this.
Okay.
And now we have the Reader's Digest condensed 411 Twitter version.
Here we go.
Today, 5 to 9 tonight at Mount Sequoia Parker Hall, the Boston Mountain Potters Association is having their holiday pottery sale.
Right.
It continues tomorrow from 10 to 6 and Sunday from 10 to 4. Getting in is free. Getting out is up to you. This is the weekend for all of the events at the Lyric Theater in Harrison featuring Jeff Koturba.
Cartoonist for the Omaha newspaper.
Yes. His gallery show ends tomorrow. Tonight, there's a reception for him and a lecture at 7. And tomorrow night, his band, the Prairie Cats, plays their unique band of swing jazz music at 7, all at the Lyric Theater. Had a great interview with this guy. Go meet him.
Maybe the Prairie Cats will play Twist the night before Christmas.
It's possible.
I mean, I don't even know if that's a song, but it should be.
It should be,
yes.
Now. This weekend is also the Arts Life Theater production of Willy Wonka.
Mm-hmm.
Those folks with their new facility are going to keep our arts sections full all by themselves.
Although this is not at their new facility. It's at the York Bowl.
Correct. It's 7 o'clock tonight, 2 and 7 on Saturday, and 2 on Sunday. Tickets are $8 to $12. This is the weekend for Spamalot.
Yes, it is.
At the Walton Arts Center. 8 o'clock today, 2 and 8 o'clock tomorrow. That's it.
Yeah. Three chances.
And tickets start at $59. And it's the second weekend of 20th Century.
At Fort Smith Little Theater.
A play set on a streamliner train in the beautiful 1930s. Sounds lovely. And you can find out, tickets are $10. You can find out more at 783-2966. Now, tomorrow,
Saturday,
is the holiday market at the Fayetteville Farmers Market on the Square.
Mm-hmm.
Starts at 7 a.m.
And this,
you will not see me there at 7 a.m., but you can go.
And this wraps it up for the Farmers Market this
right.
year.
It's the Fall Antique Show and Sale in Eureka Springs at the end of the Ozarks Convention Center. Hours are 10 to 6 Saturday and 10 to 4 Sunday. Tomorrow is a slideshow, one of many this fall, with photographer Tim Ernst.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow's is at 2 at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale. He is promoting his new book, Arkansas Autumn. And tomorrow night, the Barbara Mashburn Singers will perform at 7 o'clock at Rogers Little Theater. fundraiser for the foundation,
right,
that in turn provides scholarships to music and drama and art students at the university. The show is called Swing to Sing, and I'm promised it's going to feel just like a swinging jazz era nightclub.
Should be a lot of fun.
Should be, and tickets are $20.
All right, and you'll be back on the Sunday program.
I will.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday night from 10 till midnight. On this week's program, we'll hear music from the great guitarist Kenny Burrell and John Pizzarelli. We'll also hear from trombonist Ray Anderson and pianist John Beasley, Dave Brubeck, and much more. Tune in Friday night at 10 p.m. for Shades of Jazz.
Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from the 9th Annual Blues in the Natural State Festival, taking place Saturday, November 27th at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. This fundraiser will feature the Brickfields Band, Nathan A. and Max RPM, New Orleans bluesman Jeff Chaz, and more. Music starts at 7 p.m. Tickets are available at georgesmajesticlounge.com. And again, as promised, the phone number in case you want to contact David Graves in connection with the Thanksgiving meal at First United Church in Silent Springs. That number one more time, 479-524-3240. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Noel, Missouri, your NPR affiliate for the past 25 years and your source for community events. Remember, you can enter your own community event information at our website, KUAF.com. And here's one more event to put on your calendar. Spey, Arkansas will host a holiday music celebration and silent auction November 28th from 2 until 5 at the Whole Earth Organic Lounge in Fayetteville. Performers include Emily Cates, Susan Shore and Michael Cockrum, and Candy Lee. Food will also be available. Proceeds will go to support the End to Homeless Pets in Northwest Arkansas. For more information, spayarkansas.org. This is Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF 91.3 FM. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for listening. Weekend Ozarks at Large, Sunday morning at 9.